Boarding. That's the idea anyway. All right, let me see. So I've got a setup here. I don't know if you can see. There's a little text chat in the let me put this. That's where we'll be streaming for who I don't think there's anybody left, but and then that's also where I'll post the recording on the EdTech Talk site
Okay.
when we're done. So all right, well let's just have a conversation then and we'll see
Okay.
where it goes. So I think I told you a little bit in the email what this is, what my reason for stumbling on your article was, is I'm an adjunct professor at Old Dominion University in an instructional design and technology program. And like many programs, we have requirements. For example, I'm teaching a consulting skills class this year, and so our students need to go out and find clients to work with. And so, in speaking with other professors who have similar practicums or internships or whatever it might be, there's always been this, wow, wouldn't it be cool, as long as we're doing this work, that we could turn it into some good. So work with a nonprofit or another social enterprise. And so the idea is that we would create almost like a match.com. So we would get a pool of interested and engaged nonprofits who wanted to work with students. And then on the other side, we'd have a roster of faculty members from various universities, colleges in the, in, right at this point, it's North America. We've got Canada and U.S. interest, and that then hopefully we'd find a place, for them to meet up. And so that's where I stumbled on when I was doing some research on your service learning research. So how does that kind of tie into like your definition of service learning?
Well, I work for a Master's of Public Administration program, and so I teach graduate students. And in kind of looking at research that's out there, I think, I think it's interesting that you even start with a question about service learning, because lots of people have really different definitions for how they define it. And I think sometimes people think of service learning as an experience you're going to have in the community doing a direct service, something for a community organization. And our students that I teach in the master's program, they're learning administrative skills so they can work for a public or a nonprofit organization. And the type of things our students would do would be a lot, wouldn't be necessarily direct service. They would be helping an organization with a grant or helping them do a survey so they learn more about a specific problem that they're experiencing. And so it's a real academic component to it. And so when I think of service learning, I think of using my class to help out a community organization, and it's going to advance their classroom goals in some way. And I think that's a pretty firm part of our of how in my department would look at it. But I know other people on campus who will have freshmen who will be in some sort of seminar, and they may be going to an elementary school and reading to children, and that would be considered service learning. And they then may be reflecting on it back in class. And so I think there's a lot of variation depending on the population you're working with, depending both the organization as well as the student, what their learning goals are, what kind of the class is. And so I guess I think of it as fairly inclusive. But I have definitely met people who have a very narrow idea of maybe what service learning is or is not. And somewhat based on their experience, though, not to say, I mean, I think we are limited by our imagination.
So, I'm sorry, we're kind of going at this, and I apologize. I'm kind of doing this backwards, but if you wouldn't mind spending a couple seconds introducing yourself, which I probably should have done
That's
11
okay.
minutes ago, but yeah,
That's
if you just
okay.
wouldn't mind introducing yourself and your department and your research interests in general, and then how it kind of ties into what we're talking about here.
So I work for Department of Public Administration. We just teach master's students, and we're training people who are interested in public service, who want to work, for a public organization, so government, or a nonprofit organization. And our students are a range of ages. We have a lot of students who are in their early 20s, but then we have students all the way up mid-40s and 50s that we will have. And really, a strong component of our program is to engage students in the community. We have a lot of nonprofits that are nearby where our building is. We have a real emphasis on the, in the curriculum, because we're training people to work in government, because we're training people to work in the nonprofit field, to give them experience hands-on. And so that's something that I started as a, my first semester, I didn't do any service learning, but my second semester, the chair of the department approached me and said, there's this really nice guy that I know who works for the local transportation, public transportation arm of county government, and he's really interested in finding out what people think of the public bus service. Do you think that your research methods class could get, it could help him out? And so that was my first experience, and it was really trial by fire. I got really interested in doing service learning because of that experience. It was pretty good, and I felt like it definitely allowed students to interact with material in a way that they wouldn't. It was so much better than just talking about, oh, this is how you theoretically are going to design a research project. This is going to give them a real chance to do that and then do something for the community. But and so I think I kind of fell into it, and because I was trying to get tenure at the time, I was trying to think of any way I could use whatever I was doing to turn into a publishable article. So the first thing I did was the first project I did in service learning, I compared the students that I taught my first semester and some learning outcomes with students who'd taken the service learning class and looked at the two. And I've done research on different topics since that have been involved with our students' experience in service learning. And this is the only project I've done that really has been on service learning outside of students in our department, where we looked not just at what our students were experiencing and our faculty, but faculty really from three different colleges in the local area.
Okay.
And what their experiences were. And so I do other research too, but that's really what I've been doing in service learning.
And that, yeah, I, in the article that I particularly read was the one from 2012 from the Journal of Higher Ed Outreach and Engagement. And so that one was very much focused on the instructor's perspective in terms of the support they get from their institutions.
Right.
But then I saw, looking through your other roster of articles, some of the ones that were very intriguing to me, especially as I try to sell this to idea and this concept to others, is the tie-in to learning outcomes. And I know that's a piece that you've also investigated as well. So where do you see, as you mentioned a little bit, it makes it more realistic, you know, the material becomes more real when you're actually applying it. So, you know, can you kind of cover some of those factors that you've looked at in terms of learning outcomes?
Well, I looked at it in a couple different ways. We looked at it, I've lost my train of thought for a minute. We looked at service learning in terms of not just, you know, did it make a difference in the learning outcomes? And students who had it, did they get more out of the research methods class that I was teaching? And that was one way to look at it. But then also kind of the factors that set you up to get more out of a class in the first place, because we have a variety of students who come in. Does it make a difference if you're taking a lot of service learning classes, if you've had a lot of service learning experience, if you have prior work experience, and looked at some of those factors kind of behind the scenes?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what I kind of think of, I mean, I think people, it's interesting because like there has been a lot done on students in the literature and in learning outcomes, and I think that that's actually something, when I think about that's pretty well researched, that's one thing. And then people look at it from a faculty perspective, and they look at the barriers and how it's hard to do service learning. But I always think it's interesting because I really think of it as a three-legged stool, and so there's the students, there's the faculty experience, but there's also the community organization, and it's surprising to me that we don't look at it enough from that perspective, too.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of pieces that are out there that are kind of interesting to think about.
I was, my first session I had about 2 weeks ago, I spoke with Rick Schwier. He's a professor in Canada, and so he's been doing this informally as part of his, I think they're in their program, they actually have to have a practicum before they graduate as part of their mm-hmm. portfolio. And so he considers that to actually be the biggest, you know, leg of your stool, is that if you get hooked up with the wrong organization where their mission is not also to help you in this whole process, then you're in a sense destined to fail, because you have to have patience. The students obviously are learning, and so there are going to be bumps in the road. And in ours is very much project based, so we tend to have a start and a finish to something like a training program or whatever it is that you might be working on. And so if there are typical issues like scope creep, and all of a sudden the project's different than what we thought, it's you know, how to get organizations that are willing to play along with those those changes. So how do you deal with that? And when you have your students work with organizations, how do you pre-qualify them, or what are some of the steps that you take?
Well, you know, it's been, I've done service learning in two contexts. I've taught the research methods class for a long time. And I mean, I probably taught it 7 times, and 6 of those times I did a service learning project, but I would organize it where I only did one organization per session, and I divided my groups into teams. I divided the class into teams, and so they would each do a work product, and then I had, it gave me the flexibility to choose the best one, so they would get the best work product. So, and that way it was easier because I was managing only one relationship. I can say, though, that I've learned some of the relationships have gone better than others, and the ones where they've come to me, where they've said, this is what I'm interested in, because at one time I did actually have a faculty member come to me, and this was didn't work as well. He thought they were interested, but they had a very different idea of what they wanted than what I actually thought we were going to do. And I don't think they realized how much of, I'm pretty clear. I try to be pretty clear on the expectations of what I'm going to need them to do and what I think is realistic for the students to do. And because it's a research methods class, there's a lot of emphasis on data collection. And I always say, you know, we can do the data collection, but we don't have the manpower to do the recruitment of the people that you're going to survey. So it's only going to be as good as kind of the plan you've set up in place. And we don't have these pre-existing connections, and so you're really going to help us out. And whether it's a survey or it's focus groups or whatever kind of data collection, but you've got to be gathering the audience for it. And if people go in with expectations, so I think, you know, whether you're doing a project that's similar to mine or not, managing those expectations and being very clear up front and saying, this is what you need to do, this is what we can do, this is what we cannot do, and, you know, we want everyone to get as much out of it as they possibly can, but you've got to just kind of know what our limitations are going into it. So I would say managing those expectations. I've also taught recently a class, our capstone, our practicum, if you will, at the very end. And in that class is a totally different setup. It's not group projects. Each student comes in. They are doing a project, and it is also a data collection project, but it's with an organization they've interned with or that they actually work for usually now. And so that's managing. I have 22 students, so that means right now I have 22 organizations.
Yeah.
And so I, again, though, it towards this idea of managing the expectations, we meet the semester before, we lay out what's going to happen, this is what the student is going to need from you, this is what our expectations are from you, this is what you should be able to expect from the student, this is the product that we hope to achieve, hopefully to reduce miscommunication. Doesn't always work, but that's the goal.
And this semester, I only have 10 students, and I'm very much at the point where you're saying, I kind of equate it to like herding cats. We're at that stage where, and the requirement for them right now is not necessarily that they have a nonprofit or a social enterprise. They can go to their workplace or whatever it might be, but it's just what you're describing as far as it would be so much better if they had a relationship, as you're saying, they had an internship or something like that, because a lot of them are going in, and this is a consulting skills class, so in some respects it's a good thing because they need to learn how to do this when you're coming in cold and having the meetings, but they don't know where to begin, and how do you even, so they're spending like the first 6 weeks having very preliminary conversations like, you know, what do you do and what kind of training do you do? Do you have volunteers or whatever it might be? And so I think that's the part that's really intriguing, and I'd like to read more of your articles, because I think you do, and if not, maybe you can point me to places, but do you have any success factors? And you mentioned some of the things as far as, you know, almost like a memorandum of understanding with the organization, but beyond just that, like, what other support things are necessary, like, in terms of for a teacher to do this or an instructor to do this? Are there almost like basic consulting skills that need to come into play? In terms, like, do you have formalized contracts? Do you have, you know, what are kind of the parameters that you, how you set these relationships up?
We do have a memorandum of understanding with internships, and so that's kind of, that set it up. We don't with the capstone projects, though, as we get going. But what I like to do is, before they start collecting the data, after they've done a literature review, we have a meeting, and I always call it the point of no return. And at that point, they're kind of locked into whatever data they're going to do, and they have to go forward with that. And so it's at that point, you're kind of just, you know, moving on, and it's, you know, you've got to, you're committed.
You committed, yeah.
So, I mean, we looked at I did a paper with a colleague of mine on the success factors involved in doing a successful capstone, and we looked at a lot of different variables, including the strength of the student. We really thought some of the students that were really good, we thought that supervisors would like their capstones more than they actually did, which was interesting. The factors that we found that really helped predict whether a supervisor viewed it as successful, that's not actually to say that there was a successful capstone, because that's just one, we only asked it from one perspective, and I'm not sure, in some cases, I think the faculty would have disagreed. But that's okay, you know, you look at things and you kind of have different goals in mind, but the things, at least that predicted success from the agency's perspective, were just how involved and engaged they were in the project, which makes a lot of sense, because if they're more engaged in the project, then they're going to be more interested in what happens. And so we really encourage when they're working to be really involved in the design, I would say, of what's going to be done. And I think this is a very specific class with a specific data collection focus. But, I mean, I think kind of generalizing out to maybe a different type of service learning project, just being involved in the design of what's going to go on is really important, because then everyone's more vested. Mm-hmm. We also, so somewhat surprisingly, found that the people thought that they were more engaged with a capstone instructor felt better about the project. But it's kind of funny, because we don't have a lot of opportunities for, you know, I mean, there's not a lot of formal interaction. There's a couple times we have a meeting before the semester starts, and a meeting while the semester starts, and then we see them at the defense. But unless there's some sort of calamity, I don't talk with too many of these people that much. So that one was always kind of like, this is interesting, but I'm not sure how much, because it's not a huge part. I do think it would help, and I think it is important having everyone on the same page so people know if there is some sort of problem that they have some options of where they could go.
And that's kind of what we're facing right now. And I know in your article you kind of talked about like the support for the faculty, but I think also like for our students for the class, it is a formalized class, so we meet anyway every week. And so,
right.
But I do try to make those. I try to do small breakouts where it's 2 to 3 students talking about kind of the common pitfalls, like where are you in the process, what resistance are you getting as you're making recommendations, are you able to get the data, like you're saying. I can only help you if you help me to some extent.
Right.
So are you getting everything you need? And so I do think that the kind of rather than them being little islands on their own, you know, if they can kind of, you know, find a way to come together. I know when you were the article that I, again, kind of found you, you had mentioned that some institutions actually have departments that facilitate this. Is that kind of, was that kind of the exception to the rule? I think you had like three schools that you were looking at.
We had three. And actually the one, you know, there were just a variety of resource levels for the different institutions. I do think that there is an increasing interest in civic engagement at universities, and so there's more university interest in it. The one that probably had the most support, I don't know how well you remember the article, was University A in the article. Since that we published and collected our research, they've actually formalized and now have a central clearinghouse, one office. And so that was a university that had a bunch of different offices, but they didn't really coordinate well, and I think some of the coordination challenges have been reduced. I don't think it's perfect, though. But I think it's not unusual to see a setup like that, but it's not common either, in that you have to have a lot of resources to be able to do that. And I think one of the things for me that was interesting about the article was just, we were looking at a big research university, we were looking at a community college, and we were looking at this very, very, very small, tiny Christian college. And, you know, people have a vision of what college is like and what institutions of higher ed are like, but there's a lot of diversity, and so there's going to be a lot of diversity as to the amount of resources that can be allocated to this. And it's really not surprising if you think about the three universities, the three colleges that we had included in the study, the one that had the support in the first place. Not that it worked all that well, but they did have offices, they did have money and time and people allocated to this. Activity is a big one. But that's not to say, you know, in some ways I think there was more of a spirit and it was more integrated. It was really integrated in that very small campus because there was more mission-driven and grassroots. And so in some ways that can be very powerful too. It's just not maybe institutionally, I'm not sure how much legs it had to go into the future, which is, but I do think you can, you know, you get it in different ways. And sometimes the formalized support is good, but sometimes people are creative if there's a passion for it.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. I'm finding some of the students are already into like their third meetings with their clients, and I actually had an email from one student today. She hasn't even started, so you know, it just kind of is. To kind of get to your point, is that part of the process too? Is like to let them sink or swim a little bit,
right.
You know, to try to build those skills, because those are things, right. Especially in our area. If it's, you know, if they want to become instructional designers. There's going to come a day when you have to be the one going out and pounding the pavement and doing this. So, you know, that's an important part. Well, I know we're kind of running on here, but I did have a million questions. But one thing I for sure wanted to ask your help in, and maybe we can exchange emails or whatever. Are there, you'd mentioned there's other research that you've read and like literature reviews, and then are there other organizations doing something similar to what I'm doing, where it's more of a platform outside of a particular institution, or are you familiar with any of those types of platforms?
You know, I have not. I was just intrigued when I got your email. The first person was like, "Wow, I haven't heard of anyone doing this," which I think is great. I haven't heard of someone doing something like this, but I think it's a really good idea, and I think any shared learning is wonderful. The only thing, you know, and I don't know how even common this is, the three organizations that we did our study, the one that I did with Allison that you found me with, they actually had received a Campus Community Compact grant. Mm-hmm. The three universities that were involved in that, they were sharing this grant. And so one of the things that they did that I thought was pretty neat is they, across campuses, would meet, and there were mentors, and as a group, they kind of brainstormed and hosted some forums together. But it was three very local universities working together, very different than what you're doing, which is really drawing on university experiences, broad range, probably across the country, which I think is great.
Yeah, and I'm kind of at the stage, I'm just, everyone, like, is kind of like, this sounds great, and then you start getting the nitty-gritty and everyone, like, right, I've been also meeting with a lot of, I live in Chicago, and I've been meeting with nonprofits here, and that, so I'll give them my pitch, like, would you be interested, and how would this work, and then right away, well, will they come to me, and I'm like, if it's, you know, BYU students know you're going to have a virtual relationship, and that brings right. up a whole, you know, can of worms that they're nervous about or whatever. But I also love the idea, as you mentioned, just even talking about it. So even if this platform I'm talking about doesn't end up being like a match.com, even if there would be a platform for people to share best practices and talk about what's been working and
right.
what's common pitfalls or, and also have you worked or heard of a group called Taproot Foundation?
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very cool. They do, truly a match.com for pro bono work, but outside of my area, they do all sorts of work, not just legal work, but whatever it might be. And so they have professionals as well as students, and so it's a big deal. We're just an itty-bitty tiny thing, and maybe I'll partner up with them. I'm not sure. But that's the closest that I've found so far to, you know, to kind of what I'm talking about. And then I also saw on your website, like there's this the Campus Compact you mentioned, and then the Philanthropy Incubator. Does that tie into any of this at all, or is that something
It
different?
Is actually separate, but it's a really great program. We have a class where students have the opportunity to develop a grant-making process where they give away $10,000 to local organizations, and they see grant applications and then come up with a criteria for reviewing them and then actually distribute funds to real organizations. And so I think for students who are learning about philanthropy and what's involved in that, it's a fantastic way to have a really – and then that would be another – I mean, I don't think when you would read – a formal definition of service learning, that's not, you know, and I'm not sure, in some ways it's not service learning in that you're not, I would just say it's experiential learning.
Right.
But I mean, it's an opportunity, because it's not in that an organization isn't getting your services, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's giving students a real hands-on opportunity to practice skills that they may, especially the students that are in, they do it, they've done in the past a couple different ways, but It has been done where it's even been cross-taught with an undergrad and a graduate students in two different classes getting together to give away the grant money, which is pretty neat.
That's very cool. So it's like they have the opportunity to do like little micro grants where they see the need. Okay. Oh,
yeah.
that's really so awesome.
So it is a neat opportunity.
Well, I'll let you go. I know I told you we'd try to wind down in like 40 minutes to 50 minutes, but I guess if I can just pick your brain just a little bit more in terms of, are there any particular researchers or authors that you think I could also dig around and read some of their stuff that are doing similar things to what we've been talking about?
Gosh. I have not worked on a paper in a while, so it's a little hard for me to answer that question.
Well, I can go to your lit review. That's usually what you do anyway.
Yeah, right? I would say, you know, that, and it really depends what you're interested in, too. If you're interested in student outcomes, like the paper that you found me in, that's not really where I would go. I mean, there's a lot that's very specific to, I mean, I could, you know what, actually what I would say for really cutting edge stuff on service learning, that I would look through the journal that you found the article in, Journal of Higher Education and Outreach. But I would also look at the Michigan Journal of Community Service Learning.
Yeah, I stumbled on that.
That's a great journal.
It looked like such a small, you know, finite little group. But actually, when you start reading it, it's beyond Michigan.
Yes, it is. Oh, yeah, no, it sounds like Michigan, but it's really, really, really a wonderful journal that has very high quality research, and it's totally focused on service learning. They have really good, that's where I would start. Honestly, I would look through that, and I would see the different, you know, I would look through the table of contents, and I would do it that way. Being that is really going to give you a sense of kind of what's the state of the field, what's out there. That's where, when I've done my research on service learning, and I've looked at it from a couple different angles, that's a journal that invariably, you know, I'll get at least a few articles from.
Good launching point anyway. And I lied. I have one more question. one more quick question. In the focus of your article, the one that I keep referring to, you did mention this idea of support for instructors. And as you mentioned yourself personally, when you were more in, you're thinking about getting tenure and you're, for you, it actually made sense, but I can see where in some respects for others it's not. So as I'm approaching faculty, what is your sense as far as how this would fit in with their priorities and their requirements? Do you think it's going to be institution, like you're saying, the one institution, it was part of their culture, so they were interested in it? Or do you think I'm going to have more success with like junior faculty or tenured faculty
I think it's really interesting. I think it depends the vision a faculty person has. I mean, I came and I work for a department where there's a lot of emphasis on community service, in part because we are trying to place people in community service organizations. And so I think going to social work, going to a public administration department, their field, you're more likely to maybe get some buy-in. However, with that said, I mean, a lot of people, the university that I work for, you know, a lot of people would kind of be like, why are you doing that? That's going to be taking away time from your research, and you're not, and there's the emphasis here is to get tenure. And so for me, I mean, I think part of it is, you know, I think what appeals to it appeals to different people. You know, I had a commitment where I really was interested in giving back to the community, and I think you do find that among some professors. I think the chair of the department, when they approached me and said, you know, I'd like you to do this, but I'd also like you to think about how you can turn this into a research project so you can get something towards your tenure, too. And it was really helpful, and it kind of made me start to think, okay, how can I get the most bang for my buck to use it not only to help students, but also to learn something from it, too, that I can then use for how I'm going to be evaluated.
Right, right.
So I think that was really you know, and kind of figuring out, I mean, and I think it's case by case, but what makes sense for that person. I think there are real institutional pressures, and I think people, I started the conversation with this, but I think people really are limited by their imaginations. There is no reason you couldn't have service learning in a biology class. You might have to think about it a little bit more, but there, I mean, I think, you know, what's the point if you're teaching something that has no practical applications? I mean, most subjects within the university should have some connection to the real world, and it's a matter of kind of thinking about it and being creative about it. I mean, for some places, it's not going to be as, departments, it's not going to be as big a stretch, but I mean, I think it's hard too, because I think you're very indoctrinated by the time you get through the tenure and promotion process. This is the kind of research that you do. I mean, I feel fortunate I work in a department where it was encouraged, people were excited about it. I know there are other departments in the college I work for, in the university, where it's harder. Mm-hmm. People are more concerned, oh, you're not doing traditional research. And so, you know, I think it's important for people to be mindful of that and to balance and to do the traditional research, but also to think creatively, okay, maybe this isn't as traditional, but I still can probably get something out of it that is useful. And think about how I could turn this into research that's going to help me in a different way.
Yeah, and I think as we're talking about even just the best practices, if we could figure out a way on my little platform to make it easier. So even, you know, we only do have so many hours in the day, obviously, and as you're saying, if you need to get tenure, you got to do certain right. things to get it. But at the same time, you're most likely you're teaching as well, and so right. if you have project-based requirements in your program or within a particular class. So if I could just make it a little bit easier by saying, okay, if you're going to work with a nonprofit or whoever it might be, here's how you should approach the relationship. These are some of the parameters right. you should have laid out with your students, with the organization, with your institution, on how you're – that's a whole – I mean, we could have hour-long conversations on that, too, is – you know, right now I've got students just literally driving all over talking to people, and I really don't even know what my parameters are as far as I don't know if they're working with kids or who they're working with, and I'm giving them pretty much free rein on the types of projects that they have, and I'm not doing any type of kind of peeking over their shoulder and making sure they're following, you know, all the protocols that they should as they're working with the organizations they're working with. I mean, I am, like you're saying, with the practice I mean, you had checkpoints, but mainly it was kind of setting them up and then talking about it at the end. So, and we did have a question. I know we're running a little long. We have a question from Ed, who's listening to us. Believe it or not, we have a couple people listening. And he was wondering if we found having private journals with each student helpful. So as they're going through the process, are they documenting what's happened? I guess I'm assuming that's what he's asking.
So actually, I think we only meet three times with the supervisors. I actually meet every week with the students.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood that. Okay.
Yeah, and I don't think I did a good job explaining that.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood that. Okay.
I am checking in with the students pretty regularly. And even when I did the research methods class. So, you know, we actually, I'll ask the students, I've never had students do journals. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something you're more likely to see in undergrad, in my experience, and maybe less, although I thought about quite a bit as to how I would incorporate it. The thing is, we have a written project at the end that is very centered on the experience of, you know, they have something in writing. And I think sometimes when people do the journal, can be a very different setup where you're looking for a written product. And some and in ours, ours is just very academic focused when you're doing it. And so it's really the research project is the end result. But I think for different classes and different goals that you might have in mind, that it could be very valuable.
What we've been doing in our consulting skills class, they have to have, first of all, with me, a course contract where it's like a memorandum of understanding, so I understand the nature of their project, what mm-hmm. their deadlines, deliverables. Then they have to have an actual contract with their organization they're working with, so everybody understands deliverables. And then I do require them in we use Blackboard, and mm-hmm. So I set up like you could have done a journal, but they call it a blog. I don't know the difference.
Right.
I think they're pretty similar. And I require from week 6 until the end, because I don't require their preliminary conversations are now so preliminary, I don't even know what they'd post, but I am asking them to post like the equivalent of like a page, like 600 words or something like that. And I usually don't have like quantitative requirements for a blog post, but I'm finding if I don't do that, they don't do it. You know, they're not reflecting on it. And actually, it's pretty, they're very reluctant to do it and to get started with it. But once the students that have actually started, it's really pretty interesting, kind of that idea of, oh my gosh, you're stuck at the same point, even though we're working on totally different projects with totally different clients. And there is a learning. They're reflecting as well as then having the opportunity to share war stories with each other about what's happening on their projects. So that's what I'm trying this semester anyway.
That is interesting. We do a lot of sharing in class on challenges they're experiencing. But, you know, I do think there is something to be said for writing, because I think people really process things differently when they're writing it down, and then they're more aware of it versus because you really are able to make connections that you wouldn't otherwise make without kind of that writing process. So I have to say I've not incorporated it into the classes that I've taught. I've thought about it. I haven't done it, but it's interesting to hear your experience.
Well, we'll see how it goes. It's just like anything. Some are gravitating to it and loving it, and then there's the 25% that you just need to kind of push along. So, but the ones who seem to like it, and we'll just have to see how it goes. I've never really had such a formalized requirement, but most of our students are spread around the country, so I don't have the luxury of looking into their eyes always.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, in your case, it would seem to me that you would definitely have to do that.
Yeah.
We meet once a week, and we do a lot. I think probably to some of the students' chagrin, we do a lot of talking about, so what are your challenges? How can we work on these challenges? Let's brainstorm.
Yeah, that's what we're doing on Thursday. So our live classes are on Thursday. We use Adobe Connect, and it's unfortunately three hours. That's really grueling for the students, but that's what I'm going to make them do this week. And like you said, it's kind of awkward the first 5 minutes, but once they kind of get the dialogue going, then then it gets better.
Can you see all the students or can you see you?
Yeah, we can all see each other, and I have the luxury. It's a pretty much an advanced class. They have to have all their preliminary instructional design classes done. So we really are focusing on the consulting skills piece of it. We're not necessarily getting into the nuts and bolts of the technical side of it. And so the class is relatively small. Like I said, it's only 10, and so we can have a pretty in-depth conversation with each student in each class. It's not like I'm broadcasting to 50 students where they're able to talk, and we all have video and the whole deal. So really, once you get past the first 5 minutes of the first class, we kind of get the technology goes away, and we just have normal conversations. So
well, that's really neat. So now, do you teach any face-to-face, or they're all virtual?
All virtual, yeah. Well, technically, I'm one of the only adjuncts that doesn't teach in Virginia, and I got my PhD there, and so kind of had this little in with the department, so they've kind of made this big exception that I just teach from a distance. So, but yeah, if I were there, it would be more of a face-to-face experience, with some students being brought in. Like, I took the program from Chicago, so I was always tapping in virtually, but yeah.
It's really neat to give that option. That's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you so very much. I really appreciate it. And thank you for playing along and working so hard to get set up. I really appreciate that.
Well, I'm sorry. It was a little bit of a slow startup, but we got going.
So No problem. Well, thank you. And I'll send you a link where we're posting this, and we'll go from there. Well, thank you so much.
Bye. Bye-bye.